Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Business Insider Secrets podcast, where we talk to exciting, fresh, talented business owners that can help you, support you, and help you develop your business and help you to succeed wherever you are in your journey. Today, I've got an epic person lined up for you that's transitioned a couple of different times. He's gone from one business to another business to another business. He successfully exited his own business. And now he's built other businesses and he's now even created a book that can help you to succeed as well. Now, I'm going to bring him in and do the introduction. So, Ben, welcome.
Hello. It's good to be here, Andy. Thanks for having me back on.
No problem. Well, thank you very much for joining us. Ben, give everyone a little bit of a snippet on you, who you are and where you're based.
Sure. Yeah, I'll try and keep it brief. I'm an e-commerce entrepreneur, got started in e-commerce kind of by accident in 2016. I got really sick, needed something to do while I was recovering. I was off work. I couldn't do my fitness hobbies. Started a fitness brand. Turned out I was pretty good at it. Quit my job. In 2019, I sold it. We were doing $6 million in annual revenue at the time. It was the first European brand to be bought by one of the new aggregators. Now I'm building new brands. Which is really fun and exciting. That's, you know, I love building brands, but I love helping other people build their brands. So I consult with private equity backed brand portfolios because they understand that it's little guys on laptops that are better at e-commerce than they are. And I co-founded an e-commerce brokerage where we help people exit their business. And yeah, you mentioned there the book and we can talk a bit about that later. I've just finished up a book for helping people do what I've done with their brands. So happy to be here.
Fantastic. So what we're going to do, we're going to talk to Ben a bit about his journey. And, you know, he's given you a very, very high level piece there. But what I really am keen on is digging into that and learning how he did that, you know, how he got into that by accident. You know, you don't get into these things by accident, although it might happen by default somehow, and what he learned along that journey so that anyone that's listening today is going to be able to go, okay, where am I in my journey? How do I set up a business? How do I develop my business? How do I grow my business? How do I exit my business? There's loads of different bits you're going to be able to glean from this. So wherever you are in your journey, there's going to be some great little tidbits in there you're going to be able to take away. So Ben, let's start where I always like to start. Talk to me how you felt your education was.
Sure. In terms of e-commerce or more generally, like literally?
No, school, I mean, I'm going right back. That. You know, as a kid, you know, yeah. How was education for you as a child growing up?
Sure. So I grew up in a small commuter town about 20 minutes from Aberdeen, to give people the context, right? And that matters because that kind of shaped what ended up happening to me in my original career. So Aberdeen, if you don't know, is an oil town, right? It is the capital of the oil industry in Europe. And now they're getting more into renewables. So my family moved to Aberdeen for oil. And growing up in this little town, I went to a nice little primary school, ended up going to a decent secondary school, state schools, not private. And I did have a good education. But I followed like the normal path that everyone's expected to do, right? Work hard at school, get decent grades, go to university, get a degree. I did a postgrad as well and get a job related to that degree. And while that was fine and I enjoyed it all, I always felt like there was something missing. And then, you know, things changed and I ended up getting into entrepreneurship.
So with your education as a kid, you know, would you, so you obviously succeeded, you know, you got to university, you know, and I don't mean that going to university is a measure of success. What I mean is you obviously past school, you enjoyed school, you got good grades at school in order to move on, or?
Yeah, well, you know, I enjoyed primary school, but I hated the first 4 years of secondary school because, well, I had a terrible time. You know, I was bullied quite a lot. But which is like pretty normal in a sense, you know, teenagers, right? It's a tough time, right? It's kind of like it is in the movies, in the high school movies, isn't it? But then what happened after the first 4 years, basically all the idiots left, frankly. And, you know, Aberdeen, here's the reason, right? I'm not saying if you leave school at 16, you're an idiot. That's not what I'm saying. For lots of people, formal education is not the right environment for them. And that's totally, like, I agree with them. But Aberdeen is its own little bubble where, yeah, you have like the standard path that I spoke about before, but there's another path which people take, which is leave school at 16. Despite having, and many of those people are kind of, you know, the knuckle dragging bully types, go work offshore on oil rigs. Just doing kind of starting right at the bottom, just doing jobs, you know, manual labor kind of things. And then work your way up until you're earning ridiculous amounts of money, but you don't really have the brains to go along with it. And after those people left school, I had a much better time. So my last 2 years of secondary school were awesome. I really came out of my shell. I became more confident. I discovered the things that I wanted to get in, ended up getting into, like sports training, which I never really got into because all the jocks kind of, they were the gatekeepers to that, right? And no one else could get into it.
On that piece, actually, that's interesting. What were the, you know, outside of school, what sort of, were you doing sort of sport-related hobbies outside of school?
While I was a kid, No, not really, no. I had asthma. I still do, but it's really well controlled. But I used my asthma as an excuse not to really do sport. My asthma is triggered by exercise and cold air. And what they...
Living in Scotland.
I'm living in Scotland, right? And what they used to make, the cross-country running that you had to do at school, they always made you do it. For whatever reason, they always chose to do it in winter. So I would have asthma attacks and, you know, it made me, and then it put me off doing sport, and then I used it as an excuse not to do any sport. So I was just a spectator, right? And later, it wasn't until I went to university, really, that I came out of my shell. I discovered boxing. I discovered CrossFit. I discovered lifting weights. I got into running, all of these things, but it didn't happen until later.
That's interesting. So In a previous life, part of my job was working in sport to get more people participating in sport. And one of the things that happens at schools is that, and I know it's slightly distracting, but is that what tends to happen is that the sporty think they're the sporty ones, and the ones that can't play, aren't in the football team or aren't in the netball team, consider themselves not to be sporty because they're not in the football team or the netball team. But they don't realize there's another 450,000 different sports that you might be good at. Because the measure of success at school is, well, are you good enough to be in the football team or the netball team?
Yeah, absolutely. Plus, it's not even about being good. Like, I discovered that one of my sports, and I consider that there are several sports that I love to participate in now, was boxing. I am not a good boxer, right? But I love it, right? And what I loved about training was the sense of belonging, the tribal part of it, the confidence it gave me, the respect that I could see it was teaching the younger kids who were boxing at that time. You know, I was in my 20s, but I was seeing these young teenagers who, if they were not in that boxing club, they probably would have been the knuckle-dragging bullies. Yeah. But they weren't, right? And actually, just to go on to a slightly different topic for a second, that's one of the reasons I think boxing should be compulsory in the school curriculum. But that's another story.
One of the things that when I do it, I, you know, speak to a lot of people in this, you know, that are entrepreneurs, one of the things that I definitely see is that a lot of them are into sport of some description. And when I say some description, they're more interested in the training to get to exactly what you said about boxing of, you know, I'm not necessarily great at boxing, but I enjoy the training, the camaraderie, the piece around it that gives you the ability to develop your own skills as an individual. There's a really interesting thing about Tony Hawk I was listening to a little while ago. And he basically said, like, I dropped out of school. I hated school. But everything you do at school, right? So he gets on a skateboard and he goes down a ramp and he falls off. He goes back on his skateboard, goes down a ramp, falls off, goes again and again and again and again, right? Yeah, and then he becomes the biggest name in skateboarding, right?
Yeah.
If you think about school is exactly the same thing. You pick up a pen and you can't write. And you'd go again and you go again and you go again and you go again, right? And what happens is that in a school environment, it's exactly the same. But Tony Hawk was basically saying, I hated school, but yet the process of learning and failing and getting back on is exactly the same. It's just in a different environment. And I feel that entrepreneurship, the difference it gives you in that field of, okay, well, the camaraderie, the get up, the foul, the start, the foul, the start, the foul, the start in sport is much more in tune with entrepreneurs in business than it is school. Because at school, someone's there guiding you, Fluffy. You don't realize you've failed until you get to maths GCSE and you realize you can't work out the equation, right?
Yeah.
Because it's not until that point you realize you can't do something and it's annoying. But that's when you're like, I hate school. Whereas when you're on a skateboard or learning CrossFit, it's a great example. You know, you can't do your muscle ups and, you know, you see everyone else doing muscle ups and it teaches that. Anyway, okay. So I like the fact that sport giving you something to help with. So I think that's really interesting, that sport piece. And of course, that led into, do you want to talk about your accident? Because your accident happened at this point, didn't it?
Yeah. It wasn't so much, you could call it an accident.
Injury?
I had a heart problem. So it was early 2016, probably January 2016. I woke up in the night with chest pains. And I'd previously had two incidents of a condition called pericarditis. And this felt kind of like that again, but really bad. So I got taken by ambulance to hospital, the emergency room for any Americans listening. A&E, if you're in the UK. And they diagnosed me that indeed this was the third time I'd had this condition. And they said, like, this is not supposed to keep happening. We need to nip this in the bud, or it doesn't just become like an acute incident. It becomes a chronic life-altering condition. So I was given all the drugs, a cocktail of drugs, signed off of work, no fitness activities allowed whilst I recovered for, I don't know, 6-9 months, something like that. And that was the catalyst that forced me to take action, because actually I had the idea for my first brand 4 years before this. In 2012, but I did nothing about it. So I'd been training at CrossFit actually with some friends. And at the end of the session, somebody said, we beasted it today. And I remember thinking, we beasted it. Beast gear. That would be a cool name for a fitness brand. And I kind of made a mental note to explore that. And I did absolutely nothing. Even though I'd read books like The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss, I was listening to his podcast and I was inspired by the idea of entrepreneurship. I didn't take action. It was only when I had to sit on my ass for months and I had nothing to do and I had this life-changing health scare that I actually took action. And so I want to say to other people is, don't wait until something dramatic happens in your life to take action, because, well, hopefully it won't happen. You just need to give yourself permission to take action. Because I think part of the reason, Andy, that I didn't take action the first time when I even had the idea was I didn't give myself permission to take action, because I, somewhat in the same kind of way that I'd taken the normal path that everyone takes, you know, school, university, job, I didn't view myself as an entrepreneur. Like, entrepreneurs were other people. They were people with business degrees or took business study at school or whatever. I was an ecologist. So I didn't consider that I was the right person to do it, which of course was absolute nonsense. There's no one better than you to build a business around your idea, because no one else has the passion that you have and no one else is you. No one else can authentically market it like you, because you're the only one of you.
I think that's quite common, isn't it? Where you speak to a lot of people where they're, I've had this great idea. Oh, and then somebody else did it. I had this great idea and that happens. Or, you get later on in life and, you know, I talk to a lot of people where they're like, I always wanted to set up my own business, but it's always there. There's always a reason why it hasn't happened. There's always a reason, I didn't have the money, or I didn't have this, or I didn't have that. The conditions weren't right. Or the worst one for me is I didn't know how to start, because actually, that's probably one of the easiest ones is just start. Go on YouTube and Google whatever you want to do. I mean,
literally, you're right. I mean, we live in a time when you can learn and do anything you want through the power of the level playing field we live in and the internet. You know, I took no courses when I started my business. I remember I'm from Aberdeen, right? We're really tight up here. So I did, you know, I learned everything from podcasts, really cheap audiobooks, and YouTube. And that was it. And I'm not saying you shouldn't pay for expert help. I do believe that. But especially when you're starting out, it's reassuring to know that you can start a business yourself because of the times we live in, the free information and the cheap tools that are available.
Yeah. I think there's three levels of education. If you're going down that route, you've got the one that takes you the most time is searching through YouTube to find all the relevant content, because someone for the subject you want hasn't laid it all out. You watch video 1, 2, 3, 4, right? So you might have to watch 10 times more hours on YouTube than you actually need to, but it's okay because you've got the time to do it, but you haven't got the cash to do it.
Yeah.
You've then got some cheap courses that fast track some of that, right? That do some of that. And then you've got large investments that fine tune that and get you to take action off the back of it. You know, one's free, one's really expensive, and one's in the middle. And it's only expensive if you know, in the cost of doing something, not necessarily the output. But the one at the end is you've got the cash, but you don't have the time. You just need someone to tell you what to do. You know, that's the three levels. So anyone listening to this for me is, you know, if you don't have the cash, I promise you, you've got the time. And I know everyone's going to say, I don't have the time. I'm calling bullshit on it right now. Because, you know, Ben, when did you take the time to do some of this stuff? You don't do this stuff, in your Monday to Friday, 9 till 5. You're doing it at 1 o'clock in the morning or 6 o'clock in the morning or in the car.
And that's the thing, right? You need to understand. And so, you know, there's so many BS gurus out there trying to tell you how easy it is. And you can almost treating it like a game, these side hustles on the internet where you can make tons of money. It's just nonsense. And part of the picture they paint is that it's really, really easy. Frankly, it's not easy. Like, you need to be the right kind of person and have the right mindset to want to start your own business, an e-commerce business in this case, and be an entrepreneur. And you have to accept that until you are in a position where you can quit your job, you will be grinding away at this late at night, early in the morning, during your lunch breaks, possibly not during your lunch breaks, but your boss isn't watching, at your weekends. And then there will come a day when actually the business can afford to pay you and you can quit your job. But until that day, it's hard, but the time does exist.
It totally. I used to, when I first set up the first businesses, I had a full-time job. And the full-time job was, you know, Monday to Friday, 9 till 5:30, 9 till 6, whatever it was. I was very fortunate. I used to have to work a lot of weekends and we got time off in lieu. So what happened is I'd work a weekend for, you know, an event or something, and I'd get the Monday and Tuesday off. But I remember that period, and I was talking to my wife about this a little while ago. I built an office in the roof of the house, because we didn't have any spare rooms. So I bought a desk from IKEA, put all the parts up through the loft hatch and built the desk in the loft. And, you know, I was in there until 1 or 2 in the morning every night trying to make this, you know, build a website, put social together. It's just what happens. All right. So you've had an injury, you've come up with this idea and you've built a brand out of it. How long did you have it before you sold it?
3 years. 3 years and a bit. I think I sold my first product to a stranger on the internet in like June 2016. Yeah. And the deal to sell it was done Halloween 2019.
Nice. And what in over that period, so just go through the key, for anyone that's not e-commerce, what are the key things that someone needs to highlight here of, you know, run an e-commerce business? Because it's not just buy some stuff from Alibaba and stick it online. It doesn't work like that.
Absolutely. So this is my take. Lots of people will teach you different things. There's lots of different takes to mine, which I also think are right. But here's my take. First of all, you need to understand, who do you want to sell to? And ideally, those people are a particular group of people to whom you have a strong affinity for, i.e. you're passionate about whatever it is. So let's say, we mentioned boxing earlier, could be boxing fans, could be knitters, could be scuba divers, could be in your day job, could be you want to sell excellent products for dentists or professional photographers, whatever it is. It's identify who, right? Then think about what, and the what is what problems do those people have and how can we solve them with products? That doesn't mean you have to invent a new product. It means, well, you could, that's one option, but it primarily means, especially when you're getting started, is what problems do they have that are already being sold by products that are selling? How can you improve on those products? Either by physically improving them or by positioning the product in a different way, perhaps making it more premium or going even more niche and making it particularly for, I don't know, instead of just knitters, maybe it's knitters with arthritis. They already use knitting needles. Maybe you can make special knitting needles for people with arthritis. I don't know. I'm making this up. Right? So it's who, and then it's what, and then it's how. Well, how are you going to sell these products to them? Well, you're going to have to go out and find manufacturing partners. You're going to need to develop prototypes. You're going to need to test those prototypes with your people. Then you're going to need to actually validate a couple things. One, you're going to have to validate that anyone's going to want to buy your product. That's pretty easy to do. You know who your people are. Just ask them. And then you're going to have to validate, do the numbers stack up? So how much can I buy this for? And how much can I sell it for? You know, very, very simply, right? I get really deep on that in the book. In terms of vetting manufacturers, actually crunching the numbers and seeing if this thing is going to fly. And then, of course, it's about marketing to your people. So speaking their language, showing up where they are. You know, are they on Facebook? Are they on Pinterest? Are they on YouTube? Are they listening to podcasts? Showing up where they are online and even in real life, perhaps at the you know, the weekly knitting club or whatever it is, scuba club. And actually showing up in front of your people and providing them with value, helpful, engaging, compelling, useful, free information. Could be videos, articles, podcasts, could be interviews, could be PDF how-to guides, anything. Provide them with lots of value and they will come to know, like, and trust you. And then they'll want to buy from you again and again and again. That's basically it in a really brief format. You'll have to get the book.
And I think what I'm alluding to there is that for anyone that wants to set up a business, there's just not one piece. There's lots of different things that you need to consider along that journey to enable you to sell a product, you know, and you know, the same is to sell a service. You know, when you think about and break that down to, you've got to identify who the people are and what the problem is. You know, selling a service is no different. It's, you know, who the people you're trying to serve and what's the problem they've got and solving the problem. And then all of those other things, you know, it's business is very, very simple. People buy stuff when they have a problem. Yep. And, you know, that problem they need to solve. Now, it could be in the way of products or services or software. You know, it could be lots of different things. So you sold that business and, you know, that, you know, congratulations. I think we've said that in the past, but that, you know, is absolutely epic to have done that especially in such a short period of time. You sold it. What are sort of the other businesses you've set up off the back of that or after that, I should say, rather than off the back of that?
Yeah, sure. So straight after, I realized that I should be sharing my information or my knowledge more. So I kind of put myself out there as a consultant. And I still do consulting in a variety of ways and advising to, I guess, with businesses that might be run by one person or a small team, all the way up to large private equity backed portfolios of brands who, like I said earlier, they've come to understand that they need help from the nimble guys on laptops to understand how they can win at e-commerce. That's one thing. So that's my kind of Ben Leonard hat, if you like. And then the other thing was, and this came about in the classic entrepreneurial way of, right, having a problem and solving it. When I sold my first brand, the brokerage that I used made a catalog of errors, one of which could have been catastrophic and cost me $500,000. I spotted the error. My accountant fixed it. We got the deal done. And at the end of the process, we said, right, we can do a better job. So we set up Ecom Brokers. So Ecom Brokers was founded in the UK. It's ecombrokers.co.uk if anyone's interested. We help e-commerce business owners plan and execute their exit strategy all over the world. And what's different about e-com brokers is that actually we have the e-commerce experience, both from the M&A and the accountancy side, but also operating the businesses. Because I'm still building brands now, right? You know, to continue to answer your question on what I'm doing now, I co-own a sports brand. I co-own a baby brand that's launching very soon. I've been developing a product, a very technical product for that brand for the last 2 years. And so I still understand what it's like to have my feet in the trenches, which means when I'm consulting with clients or when I'm helping them sell their business, I understand how they should be optimizing their business because I'm one of them, right? I get it. And so, you know, when I sold the first brand, I could have left the industry altogether. I could have probably retired, but that would have been incredibly boring. So I'm just grateful to be in this space and be able to do so many different interesting things.
Nice. And you've got your product businesses, service business. Mm. You know, what do you think that over the last 5 years, so from the exit through to where you are now, what do you think for people that are listening that are starting a business and you've started those businesses, you know, you've done one business on your own, you've done it with partners, you know, you sort of said you co-own brands, you know, you've looked at that from a slightly different model, I guess, from doing it all yourself, you know, what are sort of the things that people should know about when they're starting something, whether they're doing it with a partner, whether they're doing it on their own, what are the key things in order to make something a success, which you've done numerous times? Because people would be like, well, you know, I want to start this business, but how do I know I'm going to succeed? You know, what would be the three top tips to enable something to succeed?
Well, you know what? First, I think you there's a mindset thing, and you have to be, first of all, willing to accept that you might not succeed. And that it might not even be your fault that you don't succeed. Entrepreneurship is about taking risks. Now, there are people out there in this kind of toxic hustle culture kind of thing that seems to exist on social media now that will glorify taking ridiculous risks as entrepreneurs. But they'll always do it with the benefit of hindsight, having them taken a stupid risk and they got lucky and it paid off. I won't do that. What I will say is that entrepreneurship is about risk-taking, but it's about responsible, calculated risk-taking. So the first thing to do when you get started is ask yourself if you can afford to get started. And if this goes sideways, is that a hit you're willing to take? And are you willing to take it on the chin and maybe accept that, yeah, you lost some money, but actually it was an investment in an education and probably a better investment than spending money on an MBA or a business degree? So that's the first thing. The second thing, I think, is to accept that it won't all be plain sailing. There will be really hard times. And that's okay. And just remind yourself when you're in the middle of those hard times that you will get through that hard time. And on the other side of it, you'll have the benefit of A, the education you received, and B, the return on investment on that difficult time, right? Because, you know, many, many entrepreneurs turn back or quit when they get to the difficult times. But it's the ones who stick through it that actually get the benefit of A, everything they learned, but also on the other side of that hard time, suddenly there's much less competition because everyone else has given up, you know? And lastly, I would just say always remember the end game. And the end game ultimately probably is going to be you want to exit this thing. So when you're building it, think about how to make it something that somebody else can buy. I talk to so many people these days who've built themselves a job, and they've engineered the business accidentally in such a way that it is so reliant on them that it's very difficult for us to re-engineer it to make somebody else be able to buy it. So just remember that you're not building a job, you're building a machine which you will operate, but you can give the instruction manual to somebody else so that they can operate.
Yeah, best thing I ever heard with that was do something once, write it down, and give it to someone else to do. Now,
pretty much.
That's the way you win in business environment for me, where I'm seeing people succeed in that, is they're bringing other people in to support them. It's at what point do you bring someone in? At what point do you say, I need some support with this?
Sure. Well, and building a team, again, is something else that I kind of touch on in the book. You know, when you start, it can be very overwhelming, especially when you're starting on your own, because you're going to have to know a lot of stuff. But what I try to tell people is you don't need to be an expert at everything. You just need to know enough so that when you give it to somebody else or perhaps a third party organization, you know enough to know if they're doing a good job, right? In terms of when to hire people, relatively quickly, because if your business is going well, you're going to find that a lot of the fairly mundane day-to-day, somewhat firefighty tasks are really mounting up, and they're not what you should be doing. So customer service is a very obvious one, right? It's that type of thing. It's customer service, it's social media management, all those things, so that you can focus on the big ticket stuff that's really going to move the needle on growing the business. What's going to grow the business? More products, more channels, more services, perhaps. That's what's going to grow the business. Doing important things like negotiating terms with your manufacturers, visiting your manufacturers, exploring new marketing strategies. But day-to-day stuff isn't. So that's what you ought to be doing pretty quickly.
Focus on the £50 an hour stuff and outsource the stuff that's £5 an hour.
Absolutely.
That's definitely the way to go, 100%. I use the words employ someone there or bring staff in. You don't have to employ someone. You know, you can outsource little bits and you could outsource one piece that's just 2 hours a week. It doesn't have to be, oh my God, I've got to employ someone on a full-time contract and how am I going to afford that? It's, well, let's give them this 3 hours piece of work. It only takes me 2 hours. Let me outsource it and get someone else to do it. Don't think in your 9-to-5 mindset. Think outside of that. I think
it's absolutely. Right. Yep.
So you've put all this together and now you've come up with the idea of a book. Where did that idea come from?
Well, it was a book that I wish existed for me when I was starting. So the book is called Quit Stalling and Build Your Brand. And it is a roadmap for anyone with an idea or who may already have started, but needs some guidance for creating a successful physical products e-commerce brand. What it isn't is there's quite a lot of e-commerce books that have come out and they're perfectly good books, but they go out of date very quickly because they're so specific about the specific tools that they're using, for instance, or the technology that they're talking about, which changes all the time. Whereas mine is more a set of principles based on classic marketing principles, but applied specifically to building an e-commerce brand. So my hope is that this book will still be useful for entrepreneurs in another 5, 10, 15 years. And it's somewhat autobiographical in the sense that we go into examples of things that I have done, because I think it's important to walk the walk and show people for real what you've actually done, as well as just talking the talk. So that's what it is. And I think it's useful for anyone who's starting out or people who are kind of stuck. They've been doing this. They might be doing, you know, 6 or 7 figures, but they need some support from someone who's been there and done it and can show you how.
Love it. Love it. Love it. So if people want to get hold of the book, when can people get hold of it?
Sure. It'll be published in a few months. But what you can do now is go to quitstallingbook.com to get on the waiting list. And actually, if you go to quitstallingbook.com/Andy, you can get a free chapter and some amazing bonuses. Quitstallingbook.com/Andy.
Epic. I love that. I'm really excited to see this. I can't wait to read the chapter. Full disclosure, Ben has actually sent me the chapter to have a read. And this sort of all came up quite quickly and we've been quite busy with some bits and I didn't get a chance to read it. I'm not sure I should be publicly saying that, but I'm open to be completely honest with my failures. And that is my failure, because I'd love to be on there. However, that does mean that by the time it launches, I will have read it and I will be able to talk through it, because it gives me a couple of months to do that.
But by the time it comes out, Andy, you're going to have a physical copy arriving to your house in the post. So it's all good. Don't worry about it.
Fantastic. And I'm going to be here shouting for you. I can guarantee that, because I think it's epic. I think what you've done, the journey you've been on and the stuff you've done, and you're still only about 16. So you've done all of this in such a short space of time. It's absolutely epic to see. anyone watching the video will see that Ben is a little bit older than 16, but not much.
Yeah, I do look quite young. The way I put it is that I will be the best looking guy in the care home when I'm in my 80s. Let's put it that way.
You definitely ain't that old.
Not yet.
Brilliant. Well, Ben, for people listening, you know, the key things that you think people should do in order to take action and start a business today.
First thing is give yourself permission to start. There's no one as good as you to take your idea forward, because no one has your passion for it. You know, an easy way to sidestep the competition is just to be yourself, because there is no one else like you. So it's just authenticity. So once you get into that mindset, you'll realize that actually you can absolutely do this. The second thing is to focus on what you're passionate about and make sure that you're putting your heart and soul into that. Because if you try to start a brand about something that doesn't light you up, pretty soon it's going to fail, because you're not going to have the get up and go to actually make it happen. So give yourself permission, make sure it's something you're passionate about, and just start taking action now.
Nice. Fantastic. So if people want to get in contact with you, Ben, how can they do that?
You can email me, ben@benleonard.pro. I'm on all the main social media channels, TikTok, Instagram, Twitter. My handle is benleonardpro. My website's benleonard.pro. I'm on LinkedIn. And of course, if you go to quitstallingbook.com/Andy, you can get a free chapter and a bunch of amazing bonuses.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much for your time, Ben. It's been super having you on. And I'm sure a lot of people have got a huge amount from that. Thank you very much to everyone for listening to the Business Insider Secrets podcast. And we'll see you on the next episode very shortly. Thanks, Ben.
Cheers.